Mine is possibly a little different perspective, and what I like about what KBAI represents, and what it has done in most of its forums, because I've participated in the last 18 years in many such forums, is that it offers a lot of different ideas. Some that are complementary, some that are contradictory, all of which allow us to think and challenge our existing perceptions. Mine begins with a very simple construct: what is the nature of wellness? And unless you ask that, then all of the healthcare in the world is not going to make a whole lot of difference. All it will do is make certain individuals wealthier than what they already are. Is the idea that if we had more doctors, more hospitals, and more medicine, we would have more healthy people. Because currently, virtually all of the programs being offered in the United States have that as their notion of reality. And yet, when I take the time to look at the actual studies, the studies offered by the various groups, like the American College of Physicians and Surgeons, or the American Psychiatric Association's manuals, I keep coming back to the same thing. And this puzzles me, but it ties exactly in with the theme, democracy and fascism. A large segment of the American population have been living under a false impression that more is going to be the answer to making it better. Up to this point, it has not occurred. Now, we have not been selfish in this. We have spent over $50 billion on cancer research. Over $1 trillion on treatment. Now, when you spend $1 trillion on something, you're going to assume you're going to come up with some positive ideas. But there are no positive ideas in cancer. The mortality rate is increasing at 1.3% per year. This year, you will have in excess of 650,000 Americans dying of cancer. Now, unfortunately, 25% of those cancer deaths will come from secondary effects due to the chemotherapy or treatments themselves. In fact, the latest study, I just read it this morning, shows that bacterial infection increased tremendously in the presence of chemotherapy. And this was from a peer-reviewed journal, and it showed that the treatments themselves so lower the immune system that normal organisms that the body is able to deal with no longer can be dealt with, and, as a result, the organism itself becomes the primary reason that people get sicker and die. In fact, the irony of it is, very few people actually ever die of cancer. You die of diarrhea, you die of kidney failure, you die of cardiac arrest, you die of massive infection. Now it's an interesting thing about fascism. And it's absolutely not the same with democracy. With fascism, you have to assume that knowledge coming from a select few is so right that it is not to be challenged by the many who are supportive of it. Fascism cannot exist if it is challenged. And that's why the first thing that happens in any state where fascism historically has gained ground is that you get the people who are most apt to be policymakers and opinion leaders to support your contentions, and then they, in turn, are the guiding vehicle for everyone under them. Now in our society, the most privileged, as a group, and respected individuals are physicians, 600,000 physicians. An awful lot. Isn't it interesting? We don't respect the lawyers, but lawyers make all the laws that are self-interested to help fascism exist. And there is only a roughly small percentage that ever challenge it. And I'll go through each one of these. So, my idea is quite simple. If you were given $1 trillion, or let us say in this case, if you were given $50 billion for research and people spend $1 trillion on treatment, that's okay, but give me results. But we're not a result-oriented society. Money itself becomes a result. So those people who have the power, the fact that they have power means that that's a result. So we don't even question the very nature of power or control, and how it's used. The fact that you're powerful, you're successful, you're acknowledged, you're an authority, itself means that you can't challenge it. So we don't challenge medicine. It's sacred. In fact, back in the 1970s, when I wrote the first articles, along with Robert Houston, that were published in any national magazine about the politics of cancer, nobody would publish them. No one. I went to magazines that normally would publish my investigative reporting. No one would touch it. And I said, why? What's wrong? Is it the research? Have I misquoted people? What? They said, it's not that, Gary. It's just that you're asking us not to trust something that we've always trusted, our physician. And I can't believe that my physician would in any way be a part of any conspiracy. I said, this is not an active conspiracy by the average physician. Rather, it is their conditioning, and you can be a part of a conspiracy by conditioning, where you accept certain premises. That physician has been trained in pharmacology, not in prevention. So if you're asking him will vitamin C work to help prevent cancer, they've never had any understanding, no training. So they're going to have to say either, I am sorry, I don't know, ask someone who does, or more likely, certainly it does not, because, after all, you have made me not only the physician for illness, but also healthcare. And I keep hearing the word healthcare. Healthcare. There is no healthcare in the United States. Applause or in England. Or anywhere else. It doesn't exist. We have sickness maintenance. Now that's all right, just be honest about it, right? Look where the money goes. It goes to pharmacology. It goes to toxic drugs. It goes for more hospitals. It goes to research grants that never seem to provide any new insights. Now, then it becomes insular, and that the people who continue to get the money, and I documented them, 25 institutions get 85% of all the funds and have all the power in the war on cancer alone. I am using just one example. 25 institutions. Yes. Year in and year out. When we expose the fact that the National Cancer Advisory Board, the people who actually say where is the money going to go in cancer, 60% of all the funds were going to the institutions they were affiliated with. Very self-serving. I still don't care, as long as you give me some cures. But we weren't getting cures. We weren't getting cures back then. We re not getting cures now except for minor cancers. 12% of cancer. But what about the 88%? Now, on the one hand you have collective denial. One of the things that fascism is good for is denial. And here you have the stack of bodies, 10 million dead cancer victims in the last 22 years, since the war on cancer is going on, and no one seems to be looking at millions and millions. It's a medical genocide. I mean, 10 million people dead, and someone has got to pay attention to it. And yet not a single doctor in the United States has ever been criticized, or lost their research grants, or been brought on the carpet, or taken away from their positions of prestige because they failed using an accepted, orthodox therapy. But today in the United States, and this shows you where fascism really exists, any doctor in the United States who cures cancer using alternative methods will be destroyed. You cannot name me a doctor doing well with cancer using alternative therapies that is not under attack. And I know these people. I've interviewed them. For instance, just a few weeks ago, in California late at night, a SWAT team of 12 individuals from the FBI, and the FDA, and the Justice Department, and the Post Office, and the firearms control groups burst into a doctor's home. A 90-year-old mother, and his wife, and the doctor, who'd been practicing medicine for 40 years, without ever having a problem, had guns put to their head. The mother was very upset by this, a 90-year-old woman, and she wanted to go to the bathroom. They wouldn't even allow her to go to the bathroom. One of the people said, "You go to the bathroom, we got why." Could you imagine what kind of minds? But that's the fascist mind. No different than the fascists that shot the kids at Kent State. What kind of mind, when someone hands you a flower you blow their head off? That's the fascist mind. And fascism always supports itself. Fascism cannot exist without a culpable media. Remember, when you become fascist, you surround yourself with an inner and outer circle that makes what you do right. You write the laws, then you dictate how the laws are interpreted, how they reapplied, and you support yourself. It's a very courageous member of the press that will take this on in any consistent way. And what member of the American press, name me one, who has been consistent in taking on the AMA, the FDA, and the fascism that is rampant? Now you want to talk about how fascist it is? I can name you 60 doctors treating cancer with alternative methods. All 60 are under attack. And yet their patients are alive, or improving. Some have been cured, and it's documented. Dr. Lawrence Burton, and instead of going in there and doing objective studies, like with Dr. Lawrence Burton, Burton said, "Hey, take a look at our work." He was over here at St. Vincent's, and he worked with the famous doctor, Dr. Rutino SP. Burton had a background in oncology. He published 65 articles in peer-reviewed journals. He was a keynote speaker at scientific conferences. Everything was fine. Until the fateful day that they were able to shrink tumors in mice using special natural substances called a tumor deblocking agent, a tumor complement, from the blood. There were four ingredients they isolated. Suddenly, the American Cancer Society sends a representative to work with him. The Damon Runyon Fund funds them. The United States Public Health Service funds them. And for the next 2 years, a lot of very good activity. A whole team worked. And then the American Cancer Society invited a Dr. Friedman and Dr. Burton to go out to, I believe it was either Phoenix or Las Vegas, where they were having a national seminar of oncologists, and to duplicate their work. And they did. They had these big tumors they injected, and overnight the tumors went away. The men couldn't even believe it. Some of the other oncologists said, "Fraud." So fine. Here. You select the mice. You take it. You inject them. No, we don't want to do that. Why? Fear of knowing is the fear of doing. Why? 6 months later, the New York Academy of Sciences invited them. They duplicated it again. Now they published an article. And they published it in a prestigious journal, and Sloan Kettering had one, if it's own investigators, as one of the co-authors of the article. The American Cancer Society had a Dr. Castle as one of the authors of the article. Then suddenly there were contract negotiations. "We want to buy your thing here. We'll give you a research grant, but we want the credit for it." "No way," they said. Overnight, is it a coincidence? The United States Public Health Service stopped all funding. Damon Runyon Fund stopped all funding. And now they started getting attacked. They tried to hold together, but they had no money. Over the next year and a half, they had to stop all work because there were no funds. And also there were no more invitations to speak. no more published articles. Burton, out of frustration, went to the National Cancer Institute, and he said, "Look, and by the way, I have all of the correspondence, so those liars, and they are liars. If they say that they didn't get this correspondence, they are pathologically lying." And he says, "Give me your worst 100 cancer patients, and if I can't help them, then I will stop what I am doing." And they said, "No." And then he had no choice. He went down to the Bahamas. He couldn't do his work anymore here. He was being harassed. Now the very people who were supposed to be supporting him now are harassing him. Now he is down in the Bahamas, and guess what? His clinic is closed. His clinic is closed, as I traced it down from a false report in the White House. And we went down there and tried to get the clinic open. And then they have an investigation by the Pan Am Group, which is not an official group. And now they say that it is not a good clinic, and they say things that I find out are completely inaccurate. They say there was no autoclave equipment. Gee whiz, I go down there and there is autoclave equipment for sterilization. There are the records. Now we went through the records and we found over 500 of his patients who were alive and well 5 years after their treatment, with no cancer. And Dr. Burton didn't he selectively give us these? These were take what you want. Here are the patients I treated. So there was statistical improvement more so than any cancer institution in the United States could show. So what do? They start writing articles in the New York Daily News. Boy, that's a paper that loves to write crap on people, isn't it? Applause wanna talk about a paper that supports fascism. Man, I've seen more doctors hatcheted in there. The butchery they did on Emmanuel Ribicci, the butchery they did on Lawrence Burton, calling him nothing more. What was the quote the guy said? Burton is nothing more than a horse doctor. Denigrating him, tearing down his character. Well, if I found that he is an oncologist, and if I found that he had published all these papers, why couldn't they? Because they chose not to. But then again, remember, that's one example. I can cite you example after example of Brzezinski, down in Houston, Texas, at the very same time the FDA is giving him IND studies so he can go out and test his work, and 11 different countries are testing his antineoplastins, things taken from the blood and urine, and getting positive results. The state of Texas is trying to close him up and put him in jail. This is the kind of duplicity that goes on. An insurance company wouldn't cover his patients. Isn't it interesting? If you have coronary bypass surgery, it will be completely covered. $50,000-$60,000 not including your flowers, without a question. But if you want to have chelation therapy that over 1 million Americans have had successfully, that will reverse the actual cause of your disease, clear your arteries, and help prevent stroke so that you re-actually well, and it's non-toxic, and the whole treatment will run about $4,000. They don't want to cover that. Now, why don't they? Because, wouldn't it save them money? Wouldn't it be reasonable? Yes, until you realize that every one of these insurance companies has to honor the medical advisory board. The medical advisory board tells them which therapies are acceptable and which are not. Well, why wouldn't they accept these therapies? Take a step back. Now, we're going to reverse the process. So what we've got today? We've got arthritis, cancer, AIDS. Look, when I showed my documentary last week, were any of you in the audience last week to see the documentary? Right? We didn't have a single doctor there. We didn't have a single healthcare official. We had no journalist from any major media there. And yet press releases were sent out. It was the first positive documentary ever done on AIDS. Every single person in there had a positive statement to say, and instead of all those people being dead, they were all alive and well, and several were seroconverted from HIV positive to HIV negative. Now there is not a single person that they can bring forward who has been on their therapies, and I can bring home 1,200 people who are alive and well. That is how fascism exists in medicine. Deny. Control the press so that nobody is going to come to see what advances you've made. So it doesn't matter what advances you make. Who is going to pay attention to it? How is it going to be disseminated? Word of mouth. So they control it. But where did this come from? I could show the same thing on cancer, on heart disease, on arthritis, on mental illness. I could take you out to the Brain Bio Center in New Jersey and show you people with schizophrenia and Alzheimer's who are getting improvements in depression by rebalancing their brain chemistry using natural substances. But that's going to threaten the enormous billion-dollar psychiatric business. And by the way, they want you to be so scientific. Well, Gary, of course we would accept these therapies if they were scientifically proven. Otherwise it keeps people from proven therapies. Fair enough. You re-giving proven therapies in nursing homes? Yes. Alright, now, 1% of senior citizens have been diagnosed as psychotic. Why is it that 52% of all nursing home patients are given antipsychotic medication? That doesn't sound scientific to me. That seems like a form of social control, where you're keeping people from complaining. You're keeping them shut up. Now, why don't you go over and tell all these nursing homes and all these hospitals, stop drugging people, the side effects are devastating. And none of it is curative. None of it. You think electroconvulsive therapy is curative, where you give a grand mal seizure in the brain, so you permanently rupture and hemorrhage the brain, so the person then forgets what they were depressed about? And that's the concept? Boy, that's a great concept, isn't it? Really advanced in science. My arm itches. I cut off my arm. It no longer itches. These people are intellectual? They call themselves intellectual? I don't understand why they can't challenge this concept. But where did it come from? Where is this big effort where pharmaceutical companies, and the AMA, and the FDA, and Quackbusters, and the medical community are all doing such an enormous job to denigrate something that is natural and has a long history of safety and efficacy, meaning people taking responsibility for their health? Duravic Brothers and Dr. Ivy go back to the 1950s to brothers down in Argentina named Duravic. They had come out of the concentration camp. They went down to South America, and they were given some funding by a group of friends who formed a financial syndicate to help them finance their work with cancer. They had such promising results with animals that they sent the slides up to the greatest living cancer doctor and scientist in the United States, a man named Dr. Andrew Ivy. Without question, historically Dr. Ivy is perceived as being our greatest living scientist. He is the most cited in the scientific literature. He was the chief medical jurist at Nuremberg. He was one of the deans of academic affairs at the University of Illinois. I mean, you don't get any bigger or more powerful in medicine than he. He was an ethicist. He really had it all. So, Ivy looked at this work and said, "This is very promising." So he invited the doctors up. One was a doctor. Ivy invited him up and he said, "This is interesting enough to do a small clinical trial." Now it was called Crabiozin. Now the FDA would later lay under oath and not be found guilty of perjury, even though the jury later found them in contempt. And it shows you what happens. There is no crime that you re going to get caught for as long as you redoing it as a part of the fascism, cause fascism doesn't punish it as own. And if they do, it has a smack on the wrist and a $1 million book contract. Look at what happened with Richard Nixon. We should all have such hardships of being thrown out of office. And all the other people associated with Watergate close to him. So anyhow, they did the studies, and the studies were very promising. So then they designed a larger trial. It has made from the horse's serum. They stimulated infection in the horse, then when the horse creates antibodies, they took the antibody and isolated it and fractionalized it, and that was Crabiozin. The FDA said under oath that it was mineral water. It was not, and clearly they knew the biochemistry, but they chose to deny it. Now, this is where it all starts. There had been a head of the FDA, who later turned out to be a fraud. His name was Fishbein, and he was rampantly opposed to any alternative therapy. He went after Hoxie, the Hoxie therapy back in the 1940s and 50s, and destroyed Hoxie. But not before Hoxie sued the AMA and Fishbein and proved that the therapy actually worked. But it didn't help him, because they closed him down anyhow. So now here's our greatest scientist with all the power Dr. Ivy had, and they did a clinical study and found that there was benefit. But he wanted to do more studies. At this point, after the initial human trials came in, there was a meeting in Chicago. A man who was the treasurer at that time of the AMA, a man named Moore, met with the Duravic brothers and said, "Look, this is really important. This is our first major breakthrough in cancer. We want to manufacture this. We'll give you royalties." Duravic says, "We don't own it." Moore says, "Yes, you own it. It is yours." He said, "No, we don't own it. It is owned by a syndicate. They re the ones who have been funding our work. I can't sell you something I don't own." Moore didn't believe this. Over the next 6 months, Moore kept propositioning them, and at one of those meetings was the military intelligence chief for the Navy of Argentina, who was a friend of the people in this syndicate, who secretly tape-recorded the conversations that I have. So they can't deny that these conversations took place. Moore then said, "If I can't have it, no one is going to have it." Over the next 3 years, Crabiozin was destroyed. But to destroy Crabiozin, you first had to destroy Andrew Ivy. How do you destroy the most influential, respected scientist in the United States? You get friends in the media. You get rid of his academic affiliations. You start a whisper campaign. And next thing you know, nobody wants to know the man. It took about 5 years, then they brought him upon a trial of fraud. It was at that point the longest medical trial in the United States history. At the end of it, the jury found Ivy and the Duravic brothers innocent. Not only that, but they found the FDA irresponsible. And the jury actually made a statement, which is rare, about the contempt that the FDA had for honesty and what it did at trial. When the Duravics came out of the court, they were met by the IRS and they said, "Now, we want your tax records for the last 30 years. Ivy spent 6 years in this investigation. I have about 10,000 documents on it." And it was interesting, because the day I did a 4-hour tribute on WMCA back in 1976 was the day Ivy died. And it was one of those unusual experiences in life. but at least I had a chance to honor his work. At least to the small audience that was hearing it. In the 1960s, the AMA started a secret group called the Department of Investigations. Their sole purpose was to identify and destroy any form of alternative or challenging medical health care. As a result, upwards of 70 people worked at NICE chiropractic, podiatry, and many other areas of medical practice any access to the American healthcare delivery system, which would have helped these people. I wrote an article in 1972 based upon files that were taken out of the AMA headquarters that led five chiropractors to sue the AMA, and the AMA ended up being found guilty of conspiracy to violate the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade, along with 10 other major medical organizations in the country. One organization settled before it went to trial. A million documents were uncovered. In that, you see that organized medicine had no interest in having the average American be responsible for their health. Didn't he want prevention? And everything that was anything other than their view was destroyed. It got so bad that in some of the internal documents there was a doctor who, and they actually had canons of medical ethics which said that you could not associate with a chiropractor, you could not give patients to them, or take patients from them. Mind you, these are public-funded hospitals. And they reacting, the radiologists, as if it's their own private domain. They had no right to deny a chiropractor who had the same education and who could read x-rays, yet they denied the chiropractor to use those public hospitals. It was patently illegal. Where was the press? Where was the justice system? Supporting the status quo. So, when they were found guilty, it was interesting what was found. There was a letter from one medical doctor, and this is rather typical. The doctor said, "There's a chiropractor that belongs to my country club. Do I have to resign my membership in the country club in case we should ever talk at a cocktail party or something?" That's how fanatical it was. That was a matter that was read into the transcript at trial. It sounds impossible to believe this, but it's true. So then what are we dealing with? We are dealing with a megalithic group that allows no competition. None. If we had a fair and free market, and we had innovative and new ideas, we would have successful treatments that would prevent illnesses, or treat them using the least invasive ways that would save us enormous amounts of money. The most profitable industry in the United States, outside of illegal drugs, is pharmaceuticals. Now remember, these same people who tell us that we should be so concerned about the alternative physicians, what about all the women that went by the millions to their doctors in the 1960s and 70s and said, "Doctor, I am having these pains, or I have these mood swings." And the doctor would say, "Well, there's nothing wrong with you. It's all in your head, and give a tranquilizer." If you or I made those mistakes by the tens of millions and chemically altered people's perception because we didn't want to acknowledge that something was happening we hadn't studied or learned, we'd be disgraced. They re-simply promoted up. More money, more power, more prestige. So here's what UVE got. UVE got a historical bias going from the 1800s by organized medicine clear up to today. It denies undercover and overtly all alternative therapies and lifestyles. I debated, on ABC television, in the early 1970s, a doctor who was one of the heads of the AMA, and the subject was fiber. So wrong was their position that they said that fiber had no relevance to health. He even said on the air, "It's only good for pigs and cows as feed." Imagine how many people ended up with colon or rectal cancer because they haven't had any fiber in the diet, believing that doctor. That's the consequences when you have only one mindset and you have a bureaucracy that then is created around it that tells you this is what you should eat. Eat the basic four food groups, even though it's the primary cause of disease. This is what you should drink. Drink your milk for strong bones, even though we have more osteoporosis than the rest of the world and we drink the most milk in the world. And countries that have no dairy have no osteoporosis. They say, fiber is not important, and we have the highest incidence of spastic colon, diverticulitis, appendicitis, and other countries that have a lot of roughage and fiber have none of these. Even when the evidence is there, we refuse to acknowledge it. When the studies are there, we refuse to acknowledge it. We've got some pretty good science in the United States. I have at least 80,000 studies from peer-reviewed journals showing that there is a way of preventing disease, and there is a way of treating disease using natural techniques. And yet they say nothing exists. If it existed, they'd know about it. They don't want to know about it. They re-threatened by it. And it is because the medical groups, supported by the pharmaceutical industry that advertises in their publications, can't have competition. If you're recreating a drug for the prostate, you don't want to know about Sol-Palmetto SP. You don't want to know about zinc, because that's $5 a bottle. But your drug for the prostate is $65 a bottle, and $60 of that is profit. So the profit motive isn't either. And then you get the FDA to attack anyone, or anything, that threatens it. And we have memos from the FDA showing that they're interested in protecting the status quo. And by the way, most of the top executives from the FDA go to work in drug companies for the very people they were supposed to be guarding us from. Now it's interesting. The FDA then turns around, which is the ultimate representation of fascism in our society in medicine, how it protects the status quo from all competition and all dissent, and says, you can't have vitamin C except by prescription. And you can have no herb. We want to ban all herbs. All herbs in America are to be banned by the FDA. And all amino acids should be banned. And all nutrients except for the RDA are to be banned. And why? Well, because they re dangerous. They poison people. So, I go to a poison registry, and I find that no one has died from any overdose of any vitamins, herbs, or amino acids. Applause, but 5,000 people and up dying from drug reactions in a single year. Then I think, gee whiz. Well, let us see how good the FDA is at protecting us. So I take a look at 10 years through the General Accounting Office and find that of 200 drugs, 105 drugs were so dangerous that they were hurting of killing people. Drugs they approved. I didn't see any SWAT teams raiding any of those factories. I didn't see any of the people who passed on those drugs who VE made millions from those drugs having their bank accounts confiscated. Didn't see that? The letter doctor out in California who helps some patients giving them nutritional treatment. And he ends up in Southern California doing hard labor on a chain gang, because the court said, were you using current medically accepted practice? And he said, no, I was using nutrition. Then you read guilty. The fact that he has successfully treated his patients was immaterial to the court. He wasn't using current accepted medical practice. So these guilds that they have are there to protect the status quo. So we have no competition in medicine. We have no competition in any of these areas. So it's a $1,200,000,000,000 profitable industry. The pharmaceutical companies. The hospitals. By the way, the highest salary made last year in the United States was a man who runs a hospital group. $126 million was his salary. $126 million. And yet look at what they're redoing. Look at how many people get healthier from that system. It's needed only when you have acute care. Yes, we VE got great trauma care and helping you when you get, do you know, into an accident. We need about 20% of medicine. But even the official statement shows that only 10% of the medications are indicated for the conditions given, which means that 90% of what's going on in medicine is quackery by its very definition. So how does all this continue? Because you have people willing to accept it. Because they profit by it. Now, be the doctor who wants to stop your self-imposed censorship and see how quickly you lose your privileges. Now, how does fascism exist, then? It exists at the highest level because the people who support fascism profit from it at the policy-making level. They all think themselves good citizens. They want to see it as being negative or destructive because in their minds they're merely doing what they were taught was right. So the education system itself is flawed and supports how a mind becomes warped and dysfunctional in its reasoning. After all, only in America has the right brain and the whole heart and denied access to medical school. And that's unique because without that, you can't be a real holistic healer and help people in the larger context. Then you have the insurance companies, the medical journals who love to go to all these very fancy gatherings every year and promise all these treatments. And then you have people sticking to the protocol. I have a doctor who called me last year. He listens to the show and personally he lives a healthy life. And he was angry. And he didn't know what to do. He wanted to think whether or not he could expose the situation without getting himself involved. He said, I am giving cancer patients over here at this major cancer clinic drugs that are killing them, and I can't stop it because they say the protocol is what's important. And I say, but the patient is not doing well. They say, the protocol is what's important, not the patient. And he said, you can't believe what goes on in the name of medicine and science in this country. Oh yeah, I can. I was the one who wrote the first article in the United States on October 6, 1987, that exposed the low-level radiation human experiments. And that was only one type of low-level experiment. How does a country get away with committing such crimes against humanity, and no one, not a single person has been called up, not one person, in over 200 experiments against people that adversely affected people, without their knowledge or consent, not one human being has been brought to trial for that, because they did it under official sanction. And that's the irony. You see, you can kill every patient you see, every single patient you could kill. And you'll just keep getting more gold credit cards, and more accolades, invited to more social functions, and get another gold nameplate as long as you do it in the name of orthodoxy. Well, that is fascism. And the average American, 95% of the American public supports fascism. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. It means they have gotten so comfortable in their beliefs that they don't want to challenge the very authority that they have learned to trust because it is too much of a leap, emotionally and philosophically, for them to say, you mean, my doctor was telling me to eat the wrong foods, and it led to my congestive disease and led to my cancer. I can't believe that. They're not going to believe it. And that's why last year more meat was consumed than ever before. Not necessarily in the supermarkets. but $7 billion was spent in restaurants last year on meat. By the way, that's more than the entire health industry in America put together made last year. And that was just on beef alone in restaurants. We're eating more sugar, more artificial foods, more processed foods, more convenience foods, more fast foods, drinking more alcohol. We're sicker than ever before, and no one seems to pay attention to the fact that if all you're going to do is give them insurance to be sick, where is the incentive to be well? Now, at some point someone has got to wake up and see this, because the average person doesn't connect cause and effect. If they did, they'd stop voting for the people they vote into office. They'd stop allowing our taxes to go for what it goes for. They'd start to become actively engaged. But let us face it, and I'll end with this thought, people say, that's nonsense, Gary, the average person doesn't support fascism. I say, yes they do. At the height of the Vietnam War you had 625,000 people in Washington D.C. challenging the war for its immorality. That was 0.5% of the American population. When Russia fell, less than 0.5% of the population was getting in the streets and protesting. Every major issue. The Gulf War. The invasion of Panama. The invasion of other people's sovereignty. Less than 0.5% of the American population has ever protested anything. Now, the problem is, why? Because people get stuck in their comfort of their beliefs. And if their beliefs are wrong, it is a very diligent and courageous person who challenges them and breaks through the discomfort of re-establishing new beliefs and new values. But the people who did protested so at great sacrifice, because the second problem with fascism is that the moment that you do challenge it, you're now the target. And now you're going to have some privileges taken away. You're going to have prestige taken away. Look what they did right now, right this year. They took away all the laboratories of one of the greatest living minds in the world, Dr. Peter Duesberg. For 25 years he was the golden boy of retrovirology. And he challenged the HIV hypothesis. He said, HIV, by itself, cannot be the cause of AIDS. And for that, the media didn't want to hear it. Now, they take away his research lab. Now he is a professor without a lab. All of his grants gone. All the federal funding gone. UVE got 100,000 people getting money this year, $5 billion, to study an HIV virus. And we know more about this virus and any substance in human history, and yet they cannot help a single person with AIDS. And over here, knowing nothing about the virus but helping the immune system by building it and constructing a healthier internal biochemistry, these people are no longer manifesting viral replication of anything. Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, human herpes virus, something has gotta be happening. But if you read the scientist that decides, hey, what we're redoing is wrong. Let us look at the fact that AZT is not curing anybody. Then you're going to have your research grant taken away. And by the way, I am very, very disappointed by some AIDS organizations that have gotten enormous amounts of money, millions of dollars, from Bros Welcome, and suddenly become absolutely emotionally and intellectually anemic when it comes to challenging them. I cannot begin to tell you the power money has to co-opt people from their political persuasion. And that's unfortunate. Do you know, BVE already co-opted the environmental movement in this country. We no longer have an environmental movement in this country that has any courage or guts, because they're all getting invited to the White House or over to Gower to have lunch so they can all throw the football and talk about something. BVE got to get back to the grassroots. If we want end fascism, we cannot do it through the media. They will not participate. They're a part of the problem. You can't do it through government. They're a part of the problem. You do it by taking responsibility for your own life and saying, it's my life, Jack. I know more about me than you do. I know more about what I should be doing than you do. And I can't help it, and I really don't care if you don't like the fact that I am re-empowering myself. Thank you.